Darby Rote is the chief economist at The Efficient Group, our favorite economist with the BizNews tribe, as we see that whenever we talk to him, lots and lots of people want to find out what Darby thinks about the economy. We have got the medium-term budget policy statement. It's like used to be called the mini-budget, and now it's called something much fancier. That's coming up next Wednesday. Darby will give us some insights into what it means, what the dilemmas are that the public finance gurus have got to deal with, and exactly how they're going to, well, how they're going to deal with it. Darby, really good to be talking with you, and thanks for taking us on this journey. Let's maybe start at the beginning, and I want to show you a graph of the way that VAT has moved in South Africa. Now, we're both old enough to remember, well, I wasn't quite around at that stage, but in 1978, it came in for the first time at 4%. And Owen Howard, who was the finance minister, said, it's never going higher than 4%. Never, ever, ever. Well, we know that whenever a politician says taxes are not going to increase, we've got to understand what they're telling us, and it's not the truth.
Indeed. Hello, Alec. Of course, you know, there's nothing as permanent as a temporary tax. And this is a very good example of that. Yes, of course. And one could actually expect, I won't be surprised if we see further increases in value-added tax. And the reason for that is simply because that's the only remaining tax that can be increased and to bring significant amounts of money. The other taxes have been pretty much exhausted. In fact, the other taxes, we are overdoing it on some of the other taxes already. A very good example is corporate taxes, company taxes. Company taxes currently about 27% or so. That is just too high. We need to reduce company taxes. But the other taxes are also too high. So this is the second most important tax, value-added tax. It's a so-called indirect tax. It is actually quite an efficient tax in the sense that the collection cost is actually quite high, but it's very difficult to evade this kind of tax. So there are all sort of benefits to value-added tax. But this is the only tax that can substantially increase the tax take to the Minister of Finance.
And it nearly did in earlier this year, 6 months ago. That 15% was almost 15.5, then 16. I think they even wanted to get it to 17 at some point in time. Why do you say that it's one that is going to increase, given that there was so much resistance?
Yeah, just for the fun part, we all watched this circus called the budget at the beginning of this year, a number of attempts to get the budget passed. And eventually, some political parties, I think the second try, supported the increase in VAT. It was overthrown eventually by the courts, and eventually we did not see an increase in VAT. But the interesting part for me is that many political parties actually voted for an increase in value-added tax, and then afterwards they all claimed victory and said, listen, we prevented this increase in value-added tax. I mean, even the ANC that proposed this, they said it's thanks to the ANC that the VAT was not increased. I mean, this just goes to show.
Why do we believe these guys? I mean, how do they get away with that kind of nonsense? On the one hand, they clearly want to increase VAT. Then when it doesn't, they claim victory?
I mean, that just goes to show the quality of South Africa's political leadership. And that's all the political parties. It's not only one. All of the political parties. Look, for example, at Action South Africa. That was an interesting one for me because they supported the increase and then afterwards they said, no, they did not. But they voted for it. And many of the other ones as well. But that's just the quality of our political leadership. But that's a dilemma of politicians as well, because politicians cannot say they're going to increase taxes. Politicians never say they're going to increase taxes, but they all say they're going to spend more money on A, B, and C. But never do they say they're going to increase taxes. It's always down to the Minister of Finance to try to find the money somewhere. And like I've said, the only remaining tax that can result in substantial inflows, additional inflows, to the Minister of Finance is value-added tax. The other taxes are just not available.
Like a soapy breakup scene, selling your car can be an emotional experience.
Just how dramatic was the car selling experience?
Not dramatic at all. I did my research and We Buy Cars was by far the best price.
Very not dramatic. But I like drama.
I was standing there watching my phone, waiting for the money to get in, and there it was.
Yes. Car, driving.
We Buy Cars. The easiest way to sell your car. By far.
I wouldn't mind a little more drama. Anybody bring me some tears?
Okay, so that's something that's going to be a lot of arm wrestling, given what we saw in March. But I've got to ask you the question, why are other taxes not able to be increased? You've spoken before about something called the Laffer curve. How does that actually work?
Okay, maybe I can just make one or two comments that I think are important before we get to that. The one is that the fiscal accounts are in very deep trouble. And the fiscal accounts are in very deep trouble because the outstanding debt of the state. And just by the way, if you listen to politicians, they talk about government revenue and government expenditure and government debt. That's wrong. It's not debt that belongs to the government. Or when we vote them out, they don't take the debt with them. They leave it. So that debt is state debt. It's your debt and it's my debt. And it's not government expenditure, it's state expenditure. So let's just get the terminology right. But if you look at the state finances today, the state finances have become unstable in the sense that debt levels just kept on going up, keep on going up as a percentage of GDP. We spend more and more on interest and state debt. So we need to do something. We need to reduce this ratio of debt to GDP. Now, I said we need to reduce the ratio because we can actually increase debt as long as the economy grows fast enough. But the economy doesn't grow fast enough. So there are two variables here, the debt and the rate of economic growth. And the economy, like I said, is not growing fast enough. So we are heading for a financial crisis if we continue like this. Obviously, in an environment like this, as an economist, I would prefer the state to spend less money. But for politicians to spend less money is extremely difficult. That means they want to increase taxes. That's the only alternative available to politicians. And the only tax that we can potentially increase, like I've said, is value-added tax. Coming and having a look at some of the other taxes to see if there's a possibility of increasing some of the other taxes. Maybe I can just also interrupt myself for a moment. Alec, remember, this is the medium-term budget policy statement next week. This is not the budget. This is typically not the platform where the Minister of Finance will make changes to taxes. He may hint at one or two things, but this is a platform where he typically will give us his estimates on economic growth and things like, for example, what tax revenue is looking like, and we can talk about that and things like that. And I also expect perhaps an announcement as far as the inflation targeting is concerned.
But so we're safe, Davi, from another VAT increase, at least now, at least this
month. I would say so,
month.
Yes. I think politically it's not going to be easy to do that anyway. But in the meantime, state revenue collection is actually doing quite well. But let's just go have a look for up to now. But let's have a look at some of the other taxes. The most important revenue source to the Minister of Finance is personal income taxes. Roughly, that's about 40% of total tax take by the Minister of Finance. And we talk about so-called national government. That is what the Minister of Finance is responsible for. We cannot increase personal income taxes anymore. And the reason why is because very few people pay just about all the personal income taxes, and we are over the so-called Laffer curve. And we could talk about that as well. The second most important tax is value-added tax. The downside to value-added tax, it's a good tax in the sense it's relatively easy to collect. It's an indirect tax and there are all sorts of benefits to that. But the downside to value-added tax is that it is so-called regressive tax, which means that relatively speaking, poor people are paying more in terms of value-added tax. That's the second most important revenue source to the Minister of Finance. So that's roughly about 30% of total taxes. And then the third one is corporate taxes, company taxes, and they contribute roughly about 20%. So those are the rough numbers of the three major important taxes. There are a couple of other taxes, mostly indirect taxes, like, for example, excise duties, the fuel levy is another big one, and the so-called sin taxes and things like that. So there are a couple of other taxes, but they're actually relatively small, with the exception of the fuel levy, which brings in roughly about 100 billion rand. So that's also an indirect tax. It's pretty much the same in its, if you look at the impact on the economy, as say, for example, value-added tax. So will we see a VAT increase? Politically, it's extremely difficult to do. And I don't think we're going to see any significant tax changes now. Like I've said, this is not the platform. But in the end, there must be a tax increase if we continue on the current trajectory, because cutting back on state expenditure is political suicide, and politicians just won't do that.
Sure. Let's just explain to us that Laffer curve, please. I know you mentioned it at the BizNews conference, and you've also just touched on it now, exactly what it means, because I guess some people are saying, doesn't matter, just increase taxes, make the rich pay more.
Well, I want to make a comment about the rich, let the rich pay more, but let me explain the Laffer curve. It's easy to understand. If you levy 0% tax on my salary, then I'm quite happy to work because all the money that I earn comes to me. if you levy 100% tax on my salary, then I'm going to stop working because why should I work? Because you take all my money away. So somewhere in between 0 and 100%, there's a spot where if you increase tax a little bit more, then I'm going to start working less and less and less and less. And that is the so-called Laffer curve. And it works like that in practice as well. So you can increase taxes or the tax rates. Let me just put make it clear. You can increase tax rates and you will collect more and you can collect more. But there is a certain point when you increase taxes more, tax rates more, then some individuals will simply stop working or they will aggressively evade taxes or they will move away and go and work in another country or wherever that is. And when it comes to personal income taxes, we are over that Laffer curve. There's a lot of research indicating that we are over the Laffer curve already. So we cannot increase taxes on the rich anymore because the rich, to start off with, pay just about all the taxes as it is in any event. And by the way, also the rich are the people not getting the benefits from state expenditure mostly. So the fiscus in South Africa is the most redistributional, probably the most redistributional fiscus in the world, taking from the so-called rich and give to the poor than any other country as far as I'm aware of. So, but the Laffer curve basically comes down to the fact that you can increase taxes so much and not more because after that point, you're actually going to collect less. Now, it typically applies to income taxes. So, for example, personal income taxes is a very good example of that. The same goes for corporate taxes. If you take all corporate profits away by way of taxes, they're going to stop doing business. So there's a Laffer curve impact on corporate taxes as well. But the same applies to other taxes. Like, for example, value-added tax. You can't just keep on increasing VAT until it's 100%. There's a point where you can't increase it further. It's not as easy to calculate the actual turning point of the Laffer curve in indirect taxes like value-added tax. It's easy on personal income taxes or income taxes, for example, but there is a point on that as well. And the same goes to other taxes, like, for example, the so-called sin taxes and so on. If you levy 100% tax on cigarettes, then you're probably going to still get to sell some cigarettes, but your tax take will certainly come under some pressure as well. But the Laffer curve typically refers to income taxes.
We're already seeing that with cigarettes, aren't we? That it's now become very appealing for people to just not pay any tax and to break the law. And I guess when you have VAT, let's just say they put it up to 25%, just for argument's sake, then the evasion would be massive. We already see quite a lot of evasion now. How big is that problem in South Africa, the evasion, especially with VAT, given that it looks like that's the only place that these guys who are spending like crazy are going to be able to pull in the money to be able to afford it?
There are so many things I want to talk about what you've just said. But there's a lot of evasion probably happening on the various sin taxes, on cigarettes, for example. Cigarettes are very expensive. And people, once you're hooked on tobacco, you want to smoke. And you're going to pay for it, and you're going to pay for it and try to get it as cheap as possible. And that is exactly what it is. You're forcing it in a underground, basically. So we have to be careful. There's a moral issue as well, as far as I'm concerned, and that is, should politicians tax cigarettes at all? Because that's not their business to tell me whether I should or shouldn't smoke or drink or whatever. It's my business. I know the argument is that they will have to pay for my health services in the end if I get sick. But I've got my own medical fund. So I've got a moral issue with tax. Okay, let me just rephrase that. One of the requirements for a good tax is that it should be neutral. And what it means by neutrality is it shouldn't encourage or discourage people to do things. To smoke more or less, or to save more or less, that's not the job of politicians. The tax system should be as neutral as possible. Now, if you look at the various taxes that we have in South Africa, again, let me interrupt myself. When you talk about neutrality, there are three ways of looking at the concept of neutrality. An absolute neutral tax is, for example, a poll tax, where everybody pays exactly the same. You pay 1,000 rand tax or 10,000 rand tax, whether you've got a job or not. That is an absolute neutral tax. Everybody is affected by exactly the same nominal amount. We all pay 10,000 rand per month tax, as an example. Now, that is very, very unpopular. Margaret Thatcher tried that, and she lost her job because she tried to implement a so-called poll tax. We have a poll tax in some instances in South Africa, or a variant of that. And also, we tried a poll tax 150 or so years ago in KZN. And that was the first tax revolt that we had in South Africa. So that's an absolute equal tax. A relative equal tax is, for example, everybody pays 10% of your income. That's a relative equal tax. That sounds a little bit more fair. And then a progressive income equal tax means as your income goes up, so does your tax that you pay as well. Now, if you look at the taxes that we have, now there's no basis for a so-called progressive equality. That's not in philosophy. It's a very harmful tax because where do you end? If somebody earns R1 million per year or R10 million per year, where's the cutoff? Where's the marginal rate? Where are you going to put that? There are many questions about that. And the people, rich people that make R10 million a year or R100 million a year, they are usually quite productive. And if you tax them at 90% or 99%, then you're chasing away your most productive people in the economy. But if you look at the various taxes that we have in South Africa and you measure so-called equality based on what I've just said, then clearly on income taxes, that is a progressive income tax or progressive equal tax, because as your income goes up, so does your tax rate. If you look, for example, at the VAT, there are similarities to a relative equality, because the VAT rate is 15% for everybody. And then an absolute equal rate, we don't really have that. But although there are some examples of that in, for example, certain levies that we pay, where you pay because you are an individual. If you belong to a body corporate in a security estate, all as a household, you pay X, R1,000 or whatever to the body corporate. And that is similar to like a poll tax in a way. So if you put all of that together, then the tax system in South Africa is highly progressive. And it highly progressive taxes are very damaging to your economy, because you keep on taxing the rich more, and eventually you tax the rich out of the system. And that's pretty much where we are today. I'm not 100% against a progressive tax. But again, if you look at the budget in total, you can look at the various taxes, the progression in the various taxes or the total tax regime. But you have to look at the expenditure side of the budget as well. And that is highly redistributional as well. So unfortunately, the reality in South Africa, we have too few rich people, and the rich people that we do have, they are pretty much taxed out of the country in many instances, and they're leaving South Africa as well. But apart from that, we are also damaging the economy at various other levels with this highly progressive taxes, generally speaking. And one example of that is that the potential savers in your economy are the rich people. And if you keep on taxing them at this rate, then they will stop saving because there's just not money left anymore, and they will start saving less. And if you don't have sufficient savings, then your economy can't grow either.
It's a heck of a dilemma. If you're sitting in Gordon Dwana's position, remembering that 6 months ago he needed more money and he couldn't get the VAT increase. Did he get that money from anywhere?
Yes. SARS, and that's another problem that I have. SARS got some extra money in the budget, I think 8 billion extra or so, and SARS is very efficient. SARS is one of the few institutions under control of the politicians that is still working very well in South Africa. It makes sense because that's where the money comes from. They're the guys taking money out of our pockets. SARS is very efficient. They're quite professional, and there's huge pressure on SARS to collect as much as they possibly can because of the reasons that I've mentioned. The state finances are in trouble and we need to get more money. Unfortunately, it's coming at a very dear price because the state is highly inefficient today. And if they take R1 out of my pocket or your pocket and give it to the Minister of Finance, that money spent in the economy is worth much less than if you and I would spend that money in the economy. We're going to spend it much more efficiently than the Minister of Finance. So in a way, we all need to pay our taxes. We all need to pay our fair level of taxes. We can debate where what fair is. I would argue that it's very unfair that what we have at the moment. And I've got the economic reasons why I think it's also not very economic, very efficient in the sense that it supports economic growth. So I think it's not a very fair political system that we have. But apart from that, we are just taking money away from the productive side of the economy and give it to the unproductive side or largely unproductive side of the economy. That's just not good for the economy. Some people, I've had people visiting me and say, listen, let's start a tax revolt because the ANC is wasting your money. But I don't think that's the way, that's the right thing of doing things. Because once you succeed in the tax revolt, it's very difficult to get to turn that around. And anyway, there are many millions of people that are directly to, depending on the state to survive. And I think we've got a responsibility, South Africans, to provide this social safety net as well. But we are overdoing things. I think we are certainly overdoing things. But in the meantime, SARS is very, very aggressive. Tax collection seems to be running ahead of estimates. And it's quite possible that Minister of Finance will get more money out of the economy, out of a small economy than what he thought originally.
So if I understand correctly, they tried to raise more money through VAT 6 months ago. They couldn't get it, but they then bet on SARS, and SARS has been more aggressive and managed to pull that money in. So in many ways, it's kind of closed the gap. So we haven't got anything that we need to be terribly worried about now, excepting politicians wanting to increase VAT again in future and forgetting that the real golden goose is the economy. You've got to grow the economy.
Yeah, that is the answer in the end. We need to grow the economy. But let me give you some numbers. It seems to me, remember, 1% VAT increase will give you approximately 30 billion. So they initially wanted a 2% increase. So that would have given you roughly about 60 billion or so. It seems to me as if the overrun on VAT or overrun on total tax collections this year could be in a region of about, I would guess, about 20 or so. So it's not a full amount. So there still is a bit of a gap. But in the meantime, the Minister of Finance is keeping a lid on state expenditure, and they're trying to prevent state expenditure from getting out of hand. But the problem, and you touch on the actual issue here, is the lack of economic growth. So even if the fiscal deficit is smaller in nominal terms, if the economy is just not performing, we still will have a fiscal deficit and debt levels that are just unsustainably high relative to the size of the economy.
So what are people supposed to think about all of this now, Davi? You've made the point at the BizNews conferences, in our conversations, that eventually it's like a household. If you just keep borrowing and you keep overspending, eventually somebody's going to foreclose. They can take your house away and you're going to go bankrupt. Can that happen to a country?
No, not really, because countries do not go bankrupt. Even the Minister of Finance, he did mention, he said, listen, I'm never going to run out of money because I can simply increase taxes on you. And he's right in a way. Maybe I can just make another comment that's important. If it's, apart from the fact that we have to pay huge amounts of interest on state debt, and interest on state debt is the second most important expense item today to the Minister of Finance. It's only education where we spend more money on. In the past, the very social expenditure was the second most important expenditure item. Now it's interest on state debt. But remember, if the Minister of Finance borrows all that money out of the economy, then economists call it crowding out, that there's not money available to the private sector to borrow anymore. And that means that interest rates goes up, especially in the capital market. So interest rates, on the long-term interest rates, are because of this huge demand for money by the Minister of Finance, he pushes up long-term interest rates, making interest rates expensive, making money expensive for the private sector to borrow money. So he crowds out the private sector. So what's going to happen? Can the state go bankrupt? Not really, because states don't go bankrupt. Going bankrupt means that we're going to sell all your assets and pay off for your debtors. That's not going to happen. But typically what happens, when debt levels get out of hand, typically what happens is that you can pay off debt through various ways. One is that you actually repay the debt. That's one way. Another way of repaying the debt is simply to say, listen, I'm not going to repay the debt anymore, or simply default. Many countries defaulted in the past. But a very, very popular way of paying off debt is through inflation. And here's an interesting number. You know, 60% of the debt of Britain, the Second World War debt, 60% of that debt was eventually paid off through inflation. So inflation is a bad thing because inflation erodes the value of money, but inflation also erodes the value of debt. And that is why politicians like debt, or rather inflation.
Because it's inflation,
it erodes debt. It makes it less.
But it erodes our value of our savings, surely, this by the same token. So the politicians are taking care of their problem, but they're making it our problem.
Inflation is, in a way, a tax, and that tax is being levied on us. And it's being created, in inverted commas. The monitors are going to fight with me now. But if you look at where inflation comes from today, it comes from this ridiculous increases in the prices of electricity and local authorities and so on. And those are the so-called administrative prices. So, and that's part of the reason why the Minister of Finance does not want to reduce the inflation target to 3%, because that means that he will need to keep a lid on his own expenditure. And that means that he won't give that opening that allows the local authorities and Eskom and so on to keep on increasing well above inflation. It will become more difficult for them to do that as well. So that's the political reason why he doesn't want to reduce the inflation targets officially, because if it's officially reduced to 3%, imagine if Eskom wants to increase by 12% now, there will be a huge spotlight on Eskom. But in the meantime, the market, and this is what market, the most amazing thing about financial markets, they sense this. They sense that debt is becoming unsustainable. It is far too high. And it's not only us, the Americans as well. And I've got a suspicion that countries, and in fact, that has been proved in the past, is that if a country's got very high levels of debt, then inflation remains a persistent problem, because the markets want to erode these unsustainable levels of debt, and the inflation just keeps on popping up every time when there's an opportunity, and it kind of gets out of hand. And that's part of the reason why we need to get state debt lower as well. Lowering the inflation targets, it's a good thing in the sense it put more pressure on the politicians. So that's an excellent thing to do that. But as long as debt is as high as this, and it's not only for the Americans as well, that's part of the reason why the US dollar is under pressure and why they also have this nagging inflation problem and lucky to keep on having this problem for many years still to come until they've eventually managed their fiscal deficit or their debt levels lower as well. So inflation is the most popular way through which politicians pay off debt.
And people clearly don't understand the connection. They don't join the dots.
They don't see that. They don't think, because it's a hidden tax. Inflation is basically a tax, but you can't see the tax, and you always blame the greedy politician or the greedy capitalist and the greedy whoever. You blame them for inflation. But actually, inflation is a process, and quite often the origin of this process lies with the fiscal.
So why is our inflation so low then here in South Africa if we're seeing big increases on administered prices?
So what happens here is that we've got a cake here, and this cake is being cut up in various smaller pieces, and a bigger chunk of that cake goes to the state-owned enterprises, for example, to Eskom and the local authorities. And the Minister of Finance, he just keeps on taking more and more money out of the system. In the meantime, the Reserve Bank, and remember, there's no limitation on how much money they can take out of the system. The Minister of Finance can just increase taxes. There's no competition. There's no other fiscal authority where I can rather pay my taxes. He is the Minister of Finance. The same goes to the local authorities. It is basically a monopoly. In the meantime, the Reserve Bank realizes that we're having an inflation problem, and they keep short-term interest rates relatively high. And the result of all of this is that inevitably, the pressure will come down on the private sector, and the private sector will not be able to afford these high relative interest rates, and that squeezes economic growth. So the inevitable result of all of this is weak economic growth, and that's exactly where we are. So we need to cut back on the fiscal debt levels, and then inflate. And of course, there's the ridiculous price increases of the local authorities and the state-owned enterprises. And then that will create an environment of more sustained, lower inflation, but with lower short-term interest rates as well. And that will lead to economic growth. But where we are at the moment, we're simply squeezing the only remaining productive part of the economy, and that's the private sector. Of course, you can say, listen, but we're going to give them a sort of a opportunity here by lowering interest rates. And that certainly is available. You can lower interest rates, and that will lead more demand for money in the economy. But that's also inevitably going to lead to higher inflation. And then we've got a high inflation problem, and that undermines economic growth as well. So I'm afraid the governor of the Reserve Bank, he's doing the right thing, but we're paying a very dear price because of high short-term interest rates. But that's the only option left to us, given the current circumstances, that the more sustainable way of getting longer-term economic growth with low inflation and low interest rates is for the Minister of Finance to make the debt levels of the state to reduce that. And the only way you can do that in the current environment is to spend less money. There are other ways that we can do that as well, just by the way. If I had the power, Alec, I would completely and totally overhaul our tax regime. We have an exceptionally complex, very, very, very expensive tax system in South Africa. And I would overhaul the whole thing, even without actually lowering the total tax take out of the economy. You can make the system dramatically cheaper and easier and less cumbersome. And there are so many examples that I can point out. I mean, I will reduce the number of tax brackets for one. I will reduce the number of deductions that are allowed in A, B, and C or certain things. I will simply connect or link the various so-called sin taxes to the inflation rate. I will get rid of the motor car licenses and simply add that to the fuel levy. Those are the kind of things. Simplify the system. And it can be done. It's possible to simplify the tax regime in South Africa without actually lowering the total tax take of the Minister of Finance.
Yeah, there's just too many people, though, who are benefiting from the system. A little bit like BEE registrations. We now talk about it makes sense to get rid of BEE. Pretty much everybody, excepting for those who are benefiting greatly, get it. But there's a whole subclass that works on getting through official certification of BEE. So they're going to fight tooth and nail, otherwise their business goes. And I guess here, you've got tax consultants who say, no, bring it on, make it complicated. I like complex because that's how I get paid.
A very good example of these, now, like I said earlier, one of the requirements of a good tax is that it must be neutral. Now, value-added tax is one of those examples of a tax that is kind of neutral. But we are undermining the benefits of value-added tax by having all these zero-rated items. Because when you have a zero-rated item, you make the system more expensive. And not only do you make the system more expensive, you invite corruption. Because whenever there's an exception, it's easier to undermine the system. It's easier to corrupt the system. So we have to get rid, and there are many other reasons why we have to get rid of zero-rated items for VAT. One is that you don't know what the price is, the cost is of zero rating. If you zero rate bread, well, what is it that you pay? Because there's a price to this. So what's the loss? What is the price that you're paying for the zero rating of bread? It will be better to rather, if you want to support the poor, rather do it on the expenditure side of the budget. So no zero rated items for VAT, but increase the various grants, for example, just increase the grants and take away all the zero-rated stuff from VAT. It will be easier, simpler, and less expensive, and you can actually see what the cost is of trying to support the poor in this example. And also keep in mind that rich people also eat bread. And now people, they're asking for the zero rating of more things even. It is undermining the system. No zero rated, no exceptions. Neutrality is important. If you do want to help people, do it on the expenditure side of the budget.
Yeah, I guess that also opens a whole Pandora's box of online gaming. How much of that is being sucked out? Alcohol by the grants. And you really are starting to get into a whole new area. But, Davi, let's look at the main issue here, which you started off talking about, and you continue to bang this drum. If you don't have economic growth, you can fiddle at the edges, but you are not going to flourish, and people are going to get poorer and poorer. How, if you could just suggest to the Minister of Finance, he does one thing, to try and get that capital formation ratio from 15%, which is ridiculous when you consider that it's 25% in another emerging countries. Just something to try and get this economy turning around, getting the leveraging brain power into making things work again.
Alec, you know, I've been thinking about a question like that. And the answer to that is that there isn't a solution. There is no one thing that we can do. And the reason why is because the problem is the ANC. That is the problem. They're not going to come with a solution here because their ideologies and their policies and the whole thing is just wrong. We must get rid of the ANC. But you know, even if I had the opportunity to speak to the Minister of Finance and Maxson, I've got a long list of suggestions. We've been talking about tax reforms and expenditure and all these sort of things. I can give you a long list of things, and they're all very important. But I think what we need to do, and we've got the local elections around the corner in a year's time or so, and I think that's where we need to start with really, really simple stuff. Get rid of this corrupt policeman. The police in South Africa, their job is to protect us. They're not doing that. They're corrupt. Well, I don't know if you should say this, the majority, but many of them are corrupt. We see this now. Ask anybody about getting into a roadblock. They all take bribes, or just about all that I've heard so many stories about. And their job is to protect us. Fix the police force. Get a police force that people are proud of, and a police force that do that what it's supposed to be doing, and let's look after people. That would be my first thing that I would suggest you, whoever can do that. The second thing will be to clean the place up. It's dirty. The country is dirty. Nobody wants to invest in a place that looks like a pigsty. Clean the place up. Get the local authorities to work properly and just to clean it up. And the third thing that I would do is just enforce the traffic rules. Those are my three things. Everybody stick to the traffic rules. And you know what? It's not going to cost you that much money. Everybody's going to support that. And if you do it properly, chances are you're going to be successful. And if you're successful in something, then the other good things can follow from that as well. So those are the kind of things. We just do basic stuff. But now what we have, we've got politicians with all their fancy ideas, and now we've got another growth plan by the ANC. I've forgotten about that already. Every now and again, they've got a new 10-point plan that they want to implement and so on. It doesn't say anything. It doesn't mean anything. Get
who
practical.
Does that?
Who
puts them together, those 10-point plans that are, well,
you know,
seem
what?
To be coming around?
Yes. You know, I don't know how it works. I think one day somebody tells the president, listen, we're in deep trouble, and he sleeps badly that evening and that night, and the next morning he calls all his cabinet ministers and says, let's have a new plan. And they sit around the table and get a new plan and put it, send it out, and everybody claps hands and go away and nothing happens. That's how it works. And everybody, we've got a lot of plans. Forget about all these plans. Just start doing something. And I've mentioned three things. Simple, simple things. Nothing complicated. Just do this. And I can give you the list of the other things we can do and many other things that we can do. But just do something right. And I think start off by with the primary functions of the state. And the job of the state in the first instance is to look after you and me. Get a police force that works properly.
It's so disheartening when you have your knowledge and your wisdom and your insights into what most people are just completely disconnected from. They know things are getting worse, but they don't get it, the reason why. They can't join the dots. But is there any dot that can be joined for the public that can actually make things start turning around? We don't want to be depressed. Yeah. We want to be excited about the future.
No, no. I'm absolutely very excited. I'm very, very excited. The beginning of this year, we had the circus, budget one, budget two, and eventually budget three. And that, I think, changed the way that we look at politics in South Africa, because all of a sudden, everybody's an expert on VAT. Everybody's talking about that. We should do this. We should be doing that. And people don't always understand that. They understand it. But at least people are talking about that. And that is what should happen. The budget goes to the heart of a democracy. You vote for a political party because they tell you we're going to do A, B, and C, but they must tell you where they're going to get the money from. And it is our job. Get involved in this. Try to understand the impact of the various taxes. Where the money comes from, that is so important. And where the money goes to. And vote on those lines. Ask your political party. So ask the politicians. You say you're going to spend A, B, and C more on this and that. Where are you going to get the money from? Ask him. Don't let them get out of that. Where is the money going to come from? Is it fair? Ask them that. Is it fair to to with this massively progressive tax system that we have in South Africa. Is that fair, or is it having an impact on the economic growth? Ask them this. And then vote for a political party. Get politicians that are honest. Vote for that. Get a politician that tell me that the civil servants are overpaid and we need to cut back their salaries, and also get politicians to tell me, I'm not going to spend more on you because I don't have the money. Get politicians to tell me, I'm going to spend more on A, B, and C, and I'm going to increase the taxes that you pay in order to fund that. Get politicians just to say the obvious truth. But they don't do that.
Are you optimistic now because eyes are being opened? Is that what you're telling us?
That's what I'm saying. So we're going to talk about, that's why I say it's going to be very difficult for the politicians to increase VAT. And by the way, if I have a pick between various taxes, I would rather increase VAT than reduce some of the other more damaging taxes in the economy. But VAT, I mean, somehow VAT is standing out because it's a regressive tax and everybody knows about the VAT, and you're going to see price increases if there's an increase in VAT and so on. But at least people also are starting to look at the budget now. Remember, the budget is not separated from the government. It is an integral part of the of government, and the politicians that you vote for are the guys that decide about the budget. Make it part of mainstream political debate. The budget: where's the money coming from, and where is the money going to? And it's our decision on that in the end. Ask more questions about the budget and read more about what the various political parties stand for when it comes to the budget. Don't let them talk a lot of bullshit about they're going to create jobs and do this and that. That's nonsense. Ask them about the budget. What are you going to do with my money? Are you going to spend it wisely? And where are you going to take the taxes from? Tell me, and tell me why. Those are the questions that we need to ask our political leaders.
And so what should we be asking Gordon Dwana, when he stands up next Wednesday and he has his mini budget? What should we be thinking of anyway that he's going to tell us, whether it's lies or truth?
It's more for the budget next year, but the questions are still the same. You must ask the questions. You must ask them, where's the money coming from? Is it fair? Is it efficient? Do you do this in a cost efficient manner? The way where you're getting the money from, the various taxes. Tell me where the various taxes are coming from. Should we overhaul the system? Is that the best that we can do by way of funding this state? Ask those questions. And very importantly, what are you doing with my money? Where's the money going to? Is it spent efficiently? Are you handing out contracts to the most effective and the best contract value for money for the taxes that I pay to you? Are the civil servants paid for what they're worth to me, because they work for me in the end? Do we need all these cabinet ministers, or can we do with fewer because I fund them? Do we need the ministers to drive around in these black cars with the blue lights and assaulting people next to the road because that is done with my money in the end? Those are the questions that we need to ask. And don't let them off the hook. Let them answer those questions. And when a political party comes around next time, and when they've got these political manifestos, go through the manifesto and see if you can get the answer to these questions in the manifestos. Where are they going to get the money? Is it fair? And where's the money go to? And are they spending that efficiently or not? Get the politicians to answer those questions.
So, Davi, we're at a stage where fewer and fewer people have been voting in South Africa. What you say now resonates with me. I'm sure it resonates with many members in the BizNews tribe. But how long along the road to political maturity, in other words, where people's eyes are opened and they act on it, are we here in South Africa? Or are we both sitting here dreaming about something that isn't likely to happen in our lifetimes?
No, it's happening, Alec. It's happening. Up to now, politically, we voted along other lines. Let's be honest about it. We voted along racial lines and ideological lines and with certain historic whatever reasons that you voted for. But that is changing. We are voting for something else now. We are voting for bread and butter stuff. And that's what we should be voting for. Vote for political parties that... And of course, we are only human. I mean, I'm not, if I'm a civil servant and a political party tells me I'm going to cut your salary, am I going to vote for that political party? Unlikely to vote for that political party. So we are still, there are still various groupings in South Africa, and we're probably going to try to vote for a political party that will be best for me. But I do think that people realize what is best for the economy in the end is probably going to be good for all of us as well. And yes, let the rich pay more, but if we overdo that, those rich people are going to disappear and I will be worse off in the end. Understand this kind of thing. Yes, it is important to spend money on certain social and political projects, but if we overdo that and if we don't do it properly, we're going to waste a lot of money and we're not going to see the benefits of that. So although we are still voting in certain camps and we're still voting according to certain groups in one way or the other, we still are voting according to that, but I think people are understanding that in the end, a growing economy will be to the benefit of all of us. So I'm not calling for an absolute equal tax system, a poll tax system in South Africa, although theoretically that's the best thing to have. I am realistic about this, that the rich must pay more. But understand this, we keep on overtaxing the rich, they will go away, we will be all worse off. And the same goes for the efficiency of state expenditure.
No entrepreneurs mean no economic growth. But maybe if there's an overriding philosophy that one can use, could that be, don't think about me, think about my children, think about what I am, who I'm voting for today. Are they going to give my children and my grandchildren a better future than perhaps the one that they're promising me now? Because they could be misguided.
Yeah, I guess that's a one way of looking at it. Or another way of looking at it is not to look at the future, it's looking at the past. And we can see what's been happening in the past, say 20, even longer years in South Africa, and that's not a very pretty past. We've been getting poorer on a per capita basis. Let me put it to you this. If you look at a society successful, and in a successful society, you have all good things are part of a successful society. High levels of income, good, safe environment, a clean environment, they're trustworthy police people, good levels of education, health services, all good things go together. We can't say that about South Africa. There are so many bad things, and the bad things go together as well. So look at the past and say, listen, what we've been trying for the past 15 or 20 years clearly didn't work out well for us. So maybe we have to look at something else that when we talk, have this discussion in 10 years' time, and we look back and say, listen, things turned around there. And things started happening and turning in the right direction. Maybe what we've had up to now, and that's what I say, you ask me, give me one thing. I can't give you one thing. The only one thing I can give you is that what we've done the past, in fact, many decades, are wrong. And as far as I'm concerned, the thing that sits in the middle of everything that's wrong is the ANC. And get them to change their ideology and their policies. That's what we need to change. And I don't think that is going to happen. And if that's not going to happen, then get somebody else with the right ideologies and the right policies, because this trajectory on which we are now is not a nice one.
Okay, so if you take a different view, if you take a view that, yeah, Darby's smoking something very strong and he's never going to get rid of the ANC and we're still going to have the socialists running South Africa, what do you then do as a member, a rational member of the public?
There are many opportunities, despite the damage done by the political elite. There are many opportunities still in South Africa. One is that one authority, and I mean, I just keep on beating this drum, and that's the Reserve Fund. They've done a brilliant job in getting inflation lower. So there's an investment opportunity. Look at the capital market and the equity markets. Those are the kind of returns, they are very, very good. Something else, and I spoke about this at the conference as well. Economic activities today happens in the cloud. And politicians have much less control over us than previously. Because make sure you've got the necessary skills and a good internet connection and a good computer, and you can be part of a modern economy. Even if you live in a country that's badly managed, like South Africa. So there are opportunities, certainly. But apart from that, there are, even in the real economy, there are certain sectors in the economy that I think are really offering amazing opportunities. Despite the fact that politicians are going out of their way to undermine that, agriculture is a sector that I think is doing absolutely brilliant. But you must have special skills. and technology and capital, of course. Not the way that politicians are approaching agriculture. Education is another example of that. There are so many opportunities, investment opportunities in education and many of the other ones. And finance, and again, it's one part of that service industry. Finance offers so many opportunities. And then other very technologically driven things like artificial intelligence, drone pilots, various things in genetics or various other levels of medicine and new kinds of monies, stable coins. Those are all the opportunities that are available basically to everybody, including to us South Africans as well.
So the point is, don't get stuck in this ideology of a party, which, as you said at the conference, is back in the 1920s, what might have worked then 100 years ago. But actually have a look at the way the world has changed. See the world as it is, not as some people want it to be. And there are massive opportunities for you as an individual, as a human being, to take advantage of this.
Yeah, and government, like I've said, they are part of the problem. So the best way to handle this in the short term, of course, you have to make it your responsibility to get the right political leaders. But the best way to manage this in the short term is simply ignore them as much as you possibly can. Just stay out of their way as much as you possibly can, because they're damaging things. And it's possible to do that. I mean, you and I, we don't need permission from any politician to talk to one another. We can talk to one another. This is part of the service industry. And there are so many other things that can be done as well. So try to, as Piet Leroux says, try to create a state-proof business that protects you from the damage that the state can cause to you.
And that keeps you optimistic.
That keeps me optimistic. I'm very, very optimistic about well, all you need to do, Alec, go back 10 years, go back 30 years, go back 100 or 1,000 years and see how much progress we've made. Today, we've never had it so good. Of course, it's not always a straight line. It's going up and down. But the general trend is up. I think we are entering a period of amazing abundance of just about everything. Things are getting cheaper and cheaper. And I've spoken about this at the conference as well. And the only things that are getting more expensive are very, very special skills in the service industry. Those things are getting more expensive. Working for somebody else, even people, educators, their skills are getting more expensive. A specialist in the medical field are getting more expensive. Artificial intelligence people, programmers, drone pilots, like I've said, those skills are scarce and getting more and more expensive. But TVs and motor cars and food, all those things are actually getting cheaper and much, much, much cheaper. I know people are going to say, I don't know what I'm talking about. I promise you, go and compare the prices over time and see how long you need to work to buy a motor car today compared to 10 years ago or 100 years ago. The same goes for a computer or a cell phone or a loaf of bread. It doesn't matter. Things are getting more, are getting cheaper. And we're entering a period of amazing abundance. This artificial intelligence is going to give the economic growth a wonderful boost. It is already doing that. It's going to be disruptive, but only certain people with certain very special skills, their salaries and their wages will keep on going up. So yeah, I'm very, very optimistic about the future, simply based on what's been happening the past hundreds of thousands of years.
Tavi Roet is the chief economist of the Efficient Group. And there is a call to action if ever you needed one. The future's in your own hands, and it could not be brighter if you think in the way that Davi has outlined for us. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.